I'm Frances Akeley Lance, and I'm talking today with James Backus. Jim, I've known you for a long time. It seems to me I always remember associating you with writing of some sort.
Well, I guess I've been guilty of that. I've been tied pretty much to a typewriter or to a computer in later days through the years.
Well, I first think of you as having written one of the Bison Brevities, and then also at the community theater, West is the Land. But I think those subjects have been covered in previous interviews with you. Am I right?
I think so.
So today we will concern ourselves particularly in regards with your journalistic career. How did you develop this interest in writing?
I got started very early, Fran. My folks came to North Dakota in the early 20s. My father was an auctioneer, and he had hopes that there would be business in North Dakota with farmers, and it turned out that there was, I guess. And I would hang around the back door of the Jamestown Sun. I would be 14 or 15 years old, and the Sun recently sold, that is last year in 1988, was recently sold. But the publishers, the Hansen brothers, were willing to let me write something once a week in the Blue Jay News, which was a small corner of the paper once a week. And that involved just campus events on the high school. And I first found interest that way and found excitement about it. And there were people, very few, but there were people on the Sun who would talk to me about the profession and about ways of getting into it.
Well, what was your formal education?
I was graduate of the Jamestown High School and decided to come down to NDSU, which was once the Agricultural College. Recruited, if you please, by Dr. Clarence Putnam, who was director of the Gold Star Band in Fargo. And I was had been in the Jamestown High School Band, and so it was natural that I would think about it and would come down. And I did come down and enroll in school.
And then as soon as you got into school, I suppose you got into the college newspaper.
I was interested in joining the Spectrum. I was a member of the band, and I had other interests, including some of the musical interests that you mentioned, the Bison Brevities, which was a campus production each year. But I had very much wanted to, I always thought that I would like to be a columnist. As it turned out, eventually in the Air Force and at the Forum, which is in Fargo, I did have that opportunity. But I had really visions of being a columnist and being in a newspaper.
Well, as I recall, those years, they were rather tumultuous years. You really cut your eye teeth on a column then.
Well, it was very interesting to be, I think, on the campus during those years. I'm saying between 32 and 37. And you yourself remember the school had about 1,200 students, perhaps. Today it may have 9 or 10,000. It had 200 graduates in my class of 1937. And I think there was people... both in journalism and in English, who were extraordinary professors. I think the campus, the faculty at that time had some people who had been there for 30 or 40 years, who had been there as the school almost got started. They were researchers of national reputation, people that come to mind and will probably be found on tapes like this one. But I think there was a lot of activity. The Spectrum came out once each week on Friday, and I did newspaper just reportage, straight reportage, and then I had the opportunity to run once a week a kind of a double column trivia and things about people. I was kind of tuning up for what I would be doing, I suppose, later in the Air Force. But, of course, it came a cropper on my senior year when the college found itself under attack, really, by political forces in the state. Governor Langer and the business manager, Bismarck, they had attempted, I think, to take more control of the faculty and perhaps the budget, perhaps the extension and the experiment station's budgets, to take more control than was probably good for the state and for the school. Along in the winter term leading up to, which would be 1937, they asked for the retirement of four leading people of four different schools, these deans plus the man who was who enrolled us,
Mr. Parrott,
Robert,
registrar.
Not Robert Parrott, but Robert Parrott, I think, was the son.
Was his son. Was his
but
name
Mr.
Alfred?
Mr. Parrott, Alfred Parrott.
Yes.
He was liked by everyone. Those five, there was a dean of women, I think. They were just summarily discharged. And, of course, that caused a furor very quickly. The school was announced, was told that it might lose its accreditation. We had to write about this, of course, in the Spectrum, although we were told not to. The editor, Mr. Orville Goplin, who now lives in Florida and has done a very fine journalistic job for the State Department, he was told, and I was certainly ordered, not to do anything about this great story, one of the most important stories, perhaps, of the 20th century for the college. We did publish it. It came out on Friday noon, and by 4 o'clock that afternoon, we were fired. We were summarily discharged.
That, it was your brush with political reporting. Did you also have, in respect to your work with the Little Country Theater, did you have some experiences with Mr. Arvold?
I was very impressed by Alfred Arvold, and I suppose other people will be talking about him for posterity's sake, like this one, we hope, at some time. But I thought Mr. Arvold was had enough knowledge about the show business, had enough acquaintanceship at the highest level. He was shortly to become one of the top people in the shrine. He could lift the phone and call an impresario in New York and get scheduled the appearance of some wonderful people in the 30s. They would be from the Metropolitan Opera. They would be from overseas. They would be extraordinary people with great talent. And I thought, as an undergraduate, that here was someone who was contributing considerable. I also took courses, as most everyone did, with the idea, he had an idea that everyone should have the ability to express himself, to find a way of expressing what he thought and to do it in a fairly decent way. And so we all took various courses from him and from his assistants. And I thought that he had contributed, and has contributed, with the Little Country Theater and with his idea of bringing the theater and the meaning of theater to the grassroots. Is an extraordinary thing that maybe hasn't received all of the credit that history may give him. I enjoyed very much visiting and working with him in some of the productions. I was in one or two of the productions that were offered to the city. He was acquainted, Mr. Arvold, with Maxwell Anderson, who was a North Dakotan, in North Dakota history. And I remember that two or three of Maxwell Anderson's verse dramas were produced by the college. And then I had the opportunity to produce, or to write and to help produce, one of the Blue Key productions of the annual show that you mentioned. And I can't recall really the name of the original production that I was involved in, but I do know that Good News, which was had been a success on Broadway, was done, and I think I was enmeshed in that. I think I was one of the supporting players, if you please, of Good News. But they were great times, and I enjoyed very much. I got acquainted with Dr. Clarence Putnam, who run their Gold Star Band. I was a Gold Star Band member for 4 years. And I had a lot of respect for that little gentleman, who had a great enthusiasm for the school and for the athletic events. He would stand in front of the band when we were maybe 10 points behind the university's Sioux basketball team, and he would shout, he was from New England, and he would shout, a team that won't be beat can't be beat. He would shout this at the top of his lungs, and he was very glad when the Bison finally did manage to win. But then in 1937, having been suddenly discharged, I decided to go to California. I had a prospects of a job in California with the Los Angeles Examiner, which is one of the many newspapers owned by William Randolph Hearst. I never saw Mr. Hearst. He never came to Los Angeles, as far as I know. But I have remembered that I once worked very briefly for Patty Hearst's grandfather.
That is a distinction of sorts. Well, following, what was your wartime experience?
I enlisted right after Pearl Harbor, early in 1942, and decided to go into the Air Force. My brother was being trained in Texas at the time, and became a member of the 8th Air Force, and had 75 missions in England, out of England, over Europe. And emerged safely and became a full colonel in the Air Force and retired after 30 years. I went in as a recruit and was assigned to the Special Services, which covered a multitude of opportunities and things. We published camp newspapers. We ran UFO, USO events for the troops. We it was possible for the troops to get high school degrees through the Special Services. I wrote hero stories, which if a man came back and had a remarkable career overseas in one branch or another, I would write about it, and I would send a picture to the local newspaper, and they were so-called hero stories. And I served not overseas, but in a number of places, largely with Special Service events, running films, all kinds of films, and running war rooms, trying to tell the people why we fight. And I was in Los Angeles, I was in Las Vegas, I was in Detroit, I was in New York, I was in Patterson Field and Lexington, Virginia. And I was discharged late in 1946 as Staff Sergeant. And I'd have to say that I enjoyed the 4.5 years.
Well, you certainly did have varied experiences. Did you then, immediately after your discharge, did you come back to Fargo?
I decided to come back to Fargo. I liked Fargo, and I thought that if I got married and had a family, that it would be a good place to raise children. It's a good place for a middle-class white-collar worker. I think it's possible the lakes are close at hand, and I have no reason to change my ideas. I think it's a great place to live and work. And I went to WDAY immediately. I arrived in Fargo and was immediately employed. largely because WDUI had lost most of its people through the draft, and we're very glad to get people with some newspaper experience. And I wrote the newscasts and did many other things for WDAY and the people. I enjoyed the Ken Kennedys and the Jack Dunns and the other names, and Hildegard and the other names that come to mind when people talk about radio in Fargo.
Then what year did you go to the forum, and what were the circumstances of that?
I had worked at a number of things. I was a news editor for the North Dakota Farm Bureau, which is located in Fargo, and I had also a number of accounts. I was doing work of a journalistic nature or an editorial nature for the North Dakota Chamber of Commerce, really the Greater North Dakota Association, and I edited a small newsletter for them. I worked for the Aberdeen Angus Association as a press representative, if you please, and an editor. They also had a publication, as the Farm Bureau had a monthly publication and a weekly newsletter for its people. And I kept very busy, and I found opportunity to work with the North Dakota Children's Home, known as Children's Village. They had acquired a new place, a new plant, and they very much needed to tell the area that they had changed their name, and they needed people. I wrote and shot a film which told about the village, the children's village, and it needed that kind of work that I could do. And I then, as a result of working with the children's village, I became I think they called it director for the United Way in Fargo. It is now the United Way of Cass Clay. It has grown to four areas, but at that time it was the United Way of Fargo. And I think the first director of the campaign for my first year was Colonel Edward Clapp, I think, who was a well-known Fargo citizen. And after that, I thought that I would like to finish my career, as it was, in active newspaper work. So I talked to the forum and to the editor at the time, Mr. John Paulson. And so I was able to work for almost 14 years, retiring in 1984, after a time of doing farm stories, doing Sunday features. I wrote about 1,200 columns called The Spectator, or three times a week. It was the sort of thing, maybe the sort of thing that I had done in the Army, in the Air Force, and in college. It was human stuff, and I usually got 8 or 10 letters a day, which helped, in writing a column. That helps if you get good mail, and I did get good mail from readers. And I decided in 1984 since I was then 70, to retire and to take to do some traveling. I made an agreement with with the editor at the time to send some travel stories, and my wife and I did do about 10 travel stories in the 4 years since. And I enjoyed it a great deal, and it seemed to bring my career into full circle, starting at the Jamestown Sun a long time ago.
Well, I'm sure you're going to continue with your traveling, but in that line, what is your favorite area of journalism?
I think profiles. I think the thing that I enjoyed most was doing a profile about a person, well-known or not. visiting with him for a number of moments, times, perhaps several times, getting acquainted and listening. I found that it helps to be a good listener if you do journalism. And in listening to people, I was able then to do that a story that would reflect maybe their personality and their character. And I think that when I was successful in doing that, I think I really got great joy out of it.
Were they mostly local personalities? Is there someone that stands out in your mind particularly?
I remember, and I can't even remember his name. Perhaps perhaps it's just as well. This man operated a ranch in northern North Dakota and had developed what he called Indian ponies. They were small but tireless little ponies, and he was one of the most colorful people I think I ever met. He had his almost every remark was quotable. He was somewhat profane, maybe, but he was. But it was one of the most unforgettable characters I've ever met, and I was able to get him down on paper, which is not easy always.
That's good. Well, Jim Backus, we are very fortunate that you and your wife Betty decided that this was a good place to live, and that you're continuing to live here. I'm sure that you are doing something at the present that's keeping your very active mind going. Do you have a special project going now?
Yes, I. It's very difficult to stop writing, you know, if you've written for 55 years, which was about my time. And I was fortunate to be able to do that during the 4 years that I was in the Air Force. So I, since the farm had converted to computers, I bought a computer and I have written two novels, one a kind of a costume drama, a historical drama, fiction, and then another based generally on a North Dakota community. These scripts are in circulating around the country. I have an agent who is at least passing interested. I wrote a two-act play as part of the competition for the Centennial. They sought a script, which I think is going to be used next year around the state as part of, in connection with the Centennial Band and other things, other programs. I wrote this and did not win, and the winner, I think, is a faculty member at the University of North Dakota. And I hope that he does see the light, and that he does actually see it on the boards. I guess that I will continue to do something, you know, to end that itch. Most people with a long history are in the habit, you know, of putting the seat of the pants on the seat of the chair, and I'm going to do it even though nothing much will emerge.
Well, thank you very much, Jim, for sharing your varied experiences in journalism with us.
You're very welcome. It's been a joy. Thank you.